So, picture the last time you were at a major international airport. Just kind of close your eyes and really picture it. You've got those fluorescent lights buzzing, announcements are blaring over a PA system that's just a bit too loud.
Oh, yeah, and thousands of people rushing past you.
Right. And the smell of like stale pretzels and jet fuel is literally everywhere. Now, for you and me, that's just, well, it's just Tuesday. It's annoying. It's a hassle.
It's an inconvenience, really. We just put on our noise-canceling headphones and kind of ignore it.
We do. But now I want you to imagine that your brain filters sensory input completely differently. Imagine that the hum of those fluorescent lights sounds like a dentist's drill right in your ear, that the crowd brushing past your shoulder feels like sandpaper on your skin.
Wow, that's a terrifying shift in perspective.
It really is. And suddenly, on top of all that, someone in a uniform tells you to take off your shoes and walk through this scary metal machine completely away from your parents.
Which turns a standard travel annoyance into an absolute assault on the senses.
Exactly. And that is the reality for thousands of families traveling with an autistic child. So today, we aren't just doing some generic travel tips. We are doing a full deep dive into a comprehensive guide on flying with an autistic child. And the mission here is big.
It is big. The sources we're looking at argue that with the right step-by-step prep, this doesn't have to be something you dread.
Right. It can actually be this massive step toward independence for a neurodivergent child, which I found so inspiring.
That was my key takeaway, too, from reading through this stack. We so often view travel with special needs kids as, damage control. Just how do we survive these 6 hours without a
You're
catastrophe?
getting from point A to point B.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the literature here suggests a totally different frame. It's about skill building. It's about expanding the child's world. But, and this is a really big but it requires a level of logistical precision that most casual travelers never even think about.
Precision is the perfect word for it. And we have a ton to get through today. We're going to break down the smart booking strategies that save your sanity before you even leave the house. We're going to look at the security gauntlet because, let's face it, TSA is basically the boss level of this video
And
game.
it absolutely is.
We'll talk about managing in-flight meltdowns and this specific technology, which I found fascinating, that can keep a child safe if they try to wander off.
And we definitely need to save time for the human element at the end. Because for all the gadgets and strategies, some of the stories in these sources about how strangers react, they actually really surprised me.
Me too. But let's start at ground zero, which is the booking phase. The source material calls this controlling the variables. Now, I'm the kind of traveler who usually hunts for the cheapest ticket, regardless of the layover. I mean, I'll sit in an airport for 4 hours if it saves me 50 bucks.
And according to the sources, that is pretty much mistake number one in this context.
Okay, so walk me through the math here. Why is the cheap flight such a trap?
It all comes down to transition points. If you look at the psychology of an autistic child, or any child with sensory processing issues, the stress isn't usually the sitting still part, it's the transitions, boarding, deplaning, navigating a completely new terminal.
Finding a new gate.
Right. When you book a flight with a layover, you are mathematically doubling the number of high-stress events.
So you're literally doubling the opportunities for a meltdown.
Exactly. The sources are absolutely adamant about this book, The Direct Flight. Yes, it might cost $150 more, but you have to do a cost-benefit analysis. What is the actual cost of your child reaching their breaking point in a crowded terminal in Chicago just because you missed a connection?
So you're paying for consistency. You're paying to minimize friction.
You are. You're buying a smoother timeline.
That makes total sense. What about the time of day? I assume we aren't trying to fly out at like 8 a.m. on a Monday morning.
Definitely not. You want to aim for non-peak hours, midweek, midday. The goal is to reduce the crush of people. Less crowding at the gate means lower decibel levels, more personal space. But there's another booking variable that I found really interesting, and it's all about where you actually sit on the plane.
Ah, the classic window versus aisle debate.
But it's so much deeper than just preference here. It's about knowing your child's specific sensory profile. The sources break this down brilliantly. If you have a child who gets overstimulated by visual movement, people walking up and down, the drink cart passing by the aisle seat is actually a terrible idea.
Because they're just exposed to absolutely everything.
Precisely. In that case, the window seat creates a sort of walled-off corner. It acts as a buffer zone. Plus, looking at the clouds can be a really calming visual stim for some kids.
Okay, but what if your child is the opposite?
Right. If your child has a high need for motor activity, like if they need to move their legs or pace around, then that window seat is basically a cage.
And then you're the parent having to climb over two annoyed strangers every 10 minutes.
Which spikes everyone's anxiety. So you really have to diagnose the need beforehand. Does my child need containment, meaning the window, or freedom, meaning the aisle? And the sources heavily emphasize placing a familiar adult between the child and the stranger. You are the human shield.
I love that term, the human shield. Okay, so now let's talk about the logistics of actually getting to the airport. There was one tip in the material that seemed so minor at first, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's kind of genius. It was about parking.
Oh, the don't park in the garage rule.
Yeah. Why is that such a massive deal?
Think about it like a video game energy bar or your child's coping battery. You start the day at 100%. Every single challenge completes it. If you park in the long-term garage, you have to unload the car, drag luggage to a shuttle bus, fold up the stroller, wait for the bus, ride it.
Unload everything all over again.
Exactly. By the time you actually walk into the terminal just to check in, your child might already be at 60% energy, and you haven't even hit security yet.
So you've burned your fuse just on the commute.
You really have. So the advice is, spend the extra money on a taxi or an Uber for door-to-door service, or at least use curbside check-in. You want to preserve that precious energy for the things that actually matter.
It's all about resource management. Speaking of resources, let's talk about packing. The source basically tells parents they need to become minimalists, which, you know, as a parent, feels literally impossible.
It's incredibly hard, but the logic is so sound. The ultimate goal is to be hands-free. If you're fumbling with three roller bags and a duffel, you physically cannot hold your child's hand securely. You can't intervene if they start to bolt.
So you have to just check the big bags and keep your hands ready.
Check the bags. Keep your hands free.
And there was a quick note about passports in there that actually scared me a little bit. The 6-month rule.
Oh, yeah. That's a standard travel rule that catches so many people off guard. Many countries simply will not let you enter if your passport expires within 6 months of your arrival date.
Can you imagine doing all the sensory prep, paying for the direct flight, surviving the Uber, getting to the counter, and just being turned away?
It would be an absolute nightmare.
So true. Okay, so we've booked the direct flight, we've taken our Uber to the curb, we're packing light, the logistics are set. Now we move to phase two, which the sources call mental prep.
And this is arguably the most important phase of the entire process.
The sources talk a lot about predictability. Why is that so crucial for an autistic brain?
So neurotypical brains are actually really good at filtering. We walk into a new room and we subconsciously ignore about 90% of the data. An autistic brain often processes everything with equal intensity. New sights, new sounds, new rules. That newness is just completely overwhelming.
So the antidote to anxiety is familiarity.
Exactly. You have to make the unknown familiar before you even leave your house.
And the main tool the source suggests for this is something called social stories. Now, I should probably clarify for the listener, we aren't talking about posting a story on Instagram here. What exactly is a social story in this therapeutic context?
It's a really specific narrative tool developed for autistic children. Think of it as a script for life. You use text and pictures to literally write out the story of the trip in advance.
Like a storyboard for a movie?
Yes, but it's written in the first person. So you'd have a picture of the airport doors. And it says, I will walk into the airport. It'll be loud. I will hold mom's hand. We will wait in line. You read this to the child repeatedly in the weeks leading up to the trip.
It essentially programs the sequence into their brain.
It does. And the sources suggest taking it a step further by gamifying it. You turn that visual schedule into a quiz.
Oh, like, okay, look at the picture. After we give the lady our suitcase, where do we go next?
Right. And if they say security, they win. It gives them a sense of ownership. Instead of just being dragged along into the chaos, they actually know the plan. They know what comes next, which massively reduces the fear of the unexpected.
The source also mentioned practice runs. Is that, do they mean literally going to the airport just to practice?
It absolutely can be. Some airports and airlines host these Wings for Autism events, where you can go through the whole process, ticketing, security, even boarding a real plane, without actually taking off, a full dress rehearsal.
That's amazing, but what if your local airport doesn't do that?
Even if you can't do that, you can simulate it at home. Set up chairs in rows in your living room like an airplane. Practice waiting in a fake line. Practice taking your shoes off quickly.
Pure desensitization. Which perfectly brings us to the big scary one, phase three, the security gauntlet.
This is the bottleneck. This is where the carefully controlled variables get chaotic.
I mean, I get stressed at TSA and I fully know the rules. For a child who relies on routine and bodily autonomy, Having a uniformed stranger bark orders at you has to be so intense.
It's incredibly invasive, and that's exactly why the number one rule the sources give here is do not keep it a secret.
What do you mean by that?
You need to notify the officers immediately. The source says you should tell the airline employees at check-in, and then tell the TSA agents the second you reach the line, I am traveling with a child who has autism.
Because it stops them from misinterpreting the behavior.
Exactly. If a child doesn't make eye contact, or doesn't answer a question, or flinches when they're patted down, a TSA agent might default to viewing that as suspicious or non-compliant. By declaring the disability up front, you reframe the entire context. They switch from enforcement mode to assistance mode.
Hopefully.
Yes, hopefully.
There are actual programs to help with this too, right? I've heard of TSA Cares.
Yes, TSA Cares is a specific helpline. You can call them 72 hours before your flight, and they can actually arrange for a passenger support specialist to meet you right at the checkpoint and guide you through. It is a total game changer.
And what about those sunflowers? I remember the source mentioning a lanyard.
The Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Lanyard. It started over in the UK, but it's spreading globally now, like at JFK. It's this discreet visual signal. You wear a green lanyard with sunflowers on it, and it silently tells trained airport staff, I have a disability that you can't see. I might need more time, or I might just need you to be patient.
I love that so much. It avoids the parent having to verbally explain their life story to every single employee they pass. It's just a simple code.
Precisely. Now, once you're finally past security, you're in the terminal. And the source has a very specific warning here. Avoid the shopping concourse.
Ooh, the duty-free maze.
It is a sensory minefield. Just think about it. Strong perfumes being sprayed, bright LED screens everywhere, really narrow aisles, breakable items.
Yeah.
It's the worst possible environment for an overstimulated child. The advice is to bypass it immediately and go find an empty gate that isn't even being used yet.
Find a quiet corner and just set up camp. And I assume this is where you break out the toolkit they talked about. What are the actual essentials in the carry-on?
This is your sensory management kit. Noise-canceling headphones are completely non-negotiable to dampen the engine roar and those sudden announcements. Sunglasses even indoors to cut the harsh glare. Fidget toys. And a crucial logistical note from the source, keep this stuff at the very top of the bag.
Right. Don't bury the headphones under three extra sweaters.
If a meltdown starts, you have maybe 3 seconds to intervene. You do not want to be digging around.
Okay, so we've survived TSA. We've completely avoided the perfume section. We're at the gate. This brings us to phase four, the flight itself.
Metal tube.
Now, there's a real debate in the material about boarding. Usually, families get pre-boarding. Is taking that always the right move?
Not always. It's sort of a double-edged sword when you think about it. Pre-boarding lets you get on first, stow your bags without anyone rushing you, and get the child settled. That's obviously good. But it also means you're adding 30 to 45 minutes of sitting time to the clock while everyone else boards.
And you're sitting there while 200 people walk right past your face, bumping your shoulder with their backpacks.
Exactly. So if your child struggles with waiting or feels claustrophobic with crowds brushing past them, some parents actually choose to board last. They wait until the very end, walk straight on, sit down, the doors close. You really have to know which trigger is worse for your kid, the rush or the wait.
That is a really nuanced point. Once we're actually in the air, let's talk about food. The source was pretty blunt about this. Do not rely on the airline.
Never. I mean, airline food is weird even for adults. For a child with sensory food aversions who maybe only eats a specific texture or a certain brand of cracker, a strange airline meal is basically a starvation sentence. Pack the safe foods and pack way more than you think you need.
Same goes for technology, I assume.
Oh, yes. Do not count on the seatback screen working. Do not count on the Wi-Fi. Download absolutely everything to the iPad beforehand. And for the love of everything holy, bring an external battery pack. If the iPad dies halfway over the Atlantic, you lose your primary distraction tool.
Right. Now, there was a term in the deep dive material that I really wanted to unpack, deep pressure. They mentioned it as a specific way to calm a child in the air. What is that, biologically speaking?
So deep pressure therapy provides proprioceptive input. Basically, firm, heavy pressure helps the body understand exactly where it is in space. It naturally calms the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight response.
So it's literally grounding them.
Literally. The source suggests bringing a weighted lap pad or using compression garments like a really tight undershirt. Or, if the child starts to spiral, giving them a firm bear hug or a deep massage on the arms. It counters that floating, dizzy feeling you get when flying.
But let's say you do all of this, and it still happens, the full meltdown.
The scenario every parent dreads.
How do we actually handle it at 30,000 feet?
First, you have to try to spot it before it completely explodes. The sources call this the rumble stage.
What does the rumble stage look like?
It's rarely instant. You'll see warning signs, pacing, repetitive questioning that gets faster and faster, stimming like hand flapping or rocking, becoming much more intense, refusal to speak. These are the tremors before the quake.
So if you see the tremors, you immediately use the toolkit.
Right. Headphones go on, safe snack comes out, iPad goes on, apply deep pressure. But if the earthquake actually hits, if the screaming starts, the source has very specific advice for the parent, not just the child.
Stay calm.
It sounds so cliche, doesn't it? But here's the reality of it. Your child looks to you to gauge exactly how dangerous the situation is. If you are panicking, if you're sweating and apologizing to the neighbors and frantically digging through your bags, the child thinks, oh no, this really is a disaster.
You end up validating their fear.
Exactly. You have to put on blinders. The source says, ignore the other passengers entirely. Forget the judgment. Pretend you are in a bubble. Focus entirely on connecting with your child. Just communicate, I am here. You are safe. We will get through this.
That requires so much mental fortitude from the parent.
It really does. But it's the only way out of the spiral.
Now, there is a safety risk that is entirely distinct from the meltdown. And honestly, this is the one that would keep me up at night. Phase 5, the wandering risk.
Elopement. That's the clinical term for it. Running away.
Because airports are basically designed to lose people. They are massive, crowded, and have a million different exits. The source specifically calls it fertile ground for wandering.
And for an autistic child who might be suddenly attracted to something interesting, like a spinning baggage carousel or a glass escalator, they can vanish in a split second.
This is where the source did a really deep dive into assistive technology. And we aren't just talking about AirTags here. They focused heavily on a tool called Angel Sense.
Right. And it's so important to distinguish why this is different from a standard Bluetooth tracker. An AirTag is great for finding your keys, right? It updates every few minutes when it pings off a random iPhone. That is simply not enough for a lost child. Angel Sense is true assistive technology. It provides continuous, real-time monitoring.
And it actually works indoors, because GPS usually totally fails inside concrete airport terminals.
It does. It has specialized indoor positioning capabilities. But the features that really struck me as safety critical were the intervention tools. For instance, there's a runner mode.
What does runner mode actually do?
If your child bolts, you activate runner mode on your phone. And it shifts to giving you second-by-second updates, literally 10-second intervals of their exact location. But the real game-changer the source highlights is the auto-pickup speakerphone.
Wait, explain how that works.
So imagine your child has run off into the crowd. They're panicked. You call their cell phone. Are they really going to stop, slide to unlock the screen, and answer you?
No way. Not in a panic.
No. With this device, the parent calls, and the wearable answers automatically. It opens a two-way voice line. You can immediately shout, buddy, stop, stay right there, mommy is coming. You can verbally intervene without the child having to press a single button.
That is incredible. You can literally talk them down from a distance.
And there's also an SOS button on the wearable if the child needs you first. It changes the whole dynamic from, I hope I don't lose him, to, I have a lifeline. It allows the parent to loosen that white knuckle grip on the child's wrist just a little bit.
It buys peace of mind. Which is honestly priceless in an airport.
It really is.
So we've covered a ton of tactics today, the how-to of it all. But I want to shift gears to phase 6, the human element. Because reading this, I think a lot of the anxiety parents feel isn't just about managing the child. It's about the audience. It's about the deep fear of what strangers are going to say.
The constant judgment. People whispering, control your kid, or why is he screaming?
Exactly. But the source included some real-world stories that genuinely challenged that cynical view.
These were easily my favorite part of the reading. It's the proof that this all works. Take the story of Landon. He was a 7-year-old autistic boy flying completely alone to visit his dad.
Which, flying alone at 7, is incredibly brave for anyone.
Right. And his mom was understandably terrified. She knew Landon had a habit of asking repetitive questions when he got nervous, you know, are we there yet? How high are we? Just over and over. So she actually wrote a note, put $10 inside it, and told Landon to hand it to his seatmate. The note explained his autism and basically said, "Sorry if I'm annoying, here's $10 for lunch."
Oh man, that just breaks my heart. She felt like she had to pre-apologize for his existence.
She really did. But here's what actually happened. The seatmate, this guy named Ben, took a picture of the note and texted the mom directly. He completely refused the money. He texts her, "Landon is a great travel buddy. We're having a blast." And they just played games together the whole flight.
That honestly gives me chills.
It shows that people can be so much kinder than we give them credit for. And then there's Brayson's story, a four-year-old boy. He was having the big one. A full meltdown mid-flight, kicking, screaming, the whole thing.
The exact nightmare scenario we were just talking about.
The mom was just trying to hold him, totally bracing herself for the nasty comments to start flying. But they never came. Instead, the passengers around her actually started helping. The flight attendants sat right down on the floor with him. They engaged him. They distracted him. At the end of the flight, the crew didn't scold the mom. They actually gave her a commendation note for how she handled it.
Wow. It's like the whole village just showed up for her.
The village showed up at 30,000 feet. And it reminds us that while we spent all this time prepping the child to fit into the world, you know, teaching them to be quiet, to sit perfectly still sometimes, the world is actually willing to adapt to the child.
That is such a powerful realization. And there's even systemic proof of this happening now, right? Like the Belfast example.
Yes, the Autism in the Air program at Belfast Airport. They helped a family with two autistic boys, Hayden and Ethan, who were absolutely terrified of flying. Through a highly structured program of exposure and support with the airport staff, they actually got them on a plane. It proves that this isn't impossible. It's hard work, yes, but it's entirely doable.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what is the grand synthesis here? If a listener is sitting there right now, thinking about booking that big trip, but feeling totally paralyzed by the what ifs, what do we tell them?
We tell them that it is a journey from anxiety to confidence. You always start with a fear of the unknown, but you systematically dismantle that fear with logistics. You control the booking variables. You prep the mind with those social stories. You manage the sensory input with your toolkit. You secure their safety with tech, like AngelSense.
You essentially move from just hoping for the best to actively planning for the worst.
And by doing all of that, you achieve the ultimate mission we talked about at the very start, independence. The source explicitly calls travel the ultimate symbol of freedom. If you can help an autistic child navigate a major airport, which is objectively one of the most chaotic environments on Earth, and come out the other side, you are teaching them that the whole world is open to them. You are proving to them that they are capable.
And maybe, just maybe, you're teaching yourself something too.
What do you mean by that?
Well, thinking about Landon and Brayson, maybe all this preparation isn't just for the kid. Maybe building this meticulous plan gives the parents the courage to finally step out the front door. And once they do, they might find out that they aren't nearly as alone as they thought they were. That if they fall, someone out there might actually catch them.
That is a really beautiful way to put it. The prep gets you to the airport, but the humanity gets you through the flight.
Exactly. So to all the families out there planning their next adventure pack, the headphones, download the movies, and trust the process. You've totally got this. Safe travels, everyone.
Safe travels.